This is Full Logic Reverse. I'm your host, Mike Thornton. We hope you'll stay tuned. And I am very, very pleased to have Barbara Nash joining us, a UN-accredited observer with the International Federation for East Timor. And Barbara Nash has just returned from East Timor on September 8th, and very, very happy that you're joining us from Washington today.
Hi.
Well, hi.
Thank you.
Well, I appreciate it, because I know that you had a very, very important meeting that you were asked to go to today, and you had said you would be on the show, and I appreciate that you were able to be with us. Can you talk a little bit about what's happening in Washington today, and then perhaps we can talk about then what's been happening in East Timor?
Well, there's a meeting at the State Department with regard to war crimes being brought against people in Indonesia for the terrible atrocities that have occurred recently and also in the past in East Timor.
Talk, if you will, about what the situation has been in East Timor from your own firsthand experience of being there and observing what's been happening.
Well, I went into East Timor on August 12th. The registration process had been completed, and over 400,000 eligible people had registered to vote. During the first days, the lists of voters were at each polling center, and people could go and challenge if they felt someone should not be on the list. When we went to visit these centers, and as observers, we were to observe all parts of this voting process. But when we went to ask about the challenges, we were told in several of the stations that we went to that there really weren't challenges, that many people just came to make sure their names were in the books and that they were spelt right. When I first arrived, driving into the city, I was quite aware of the many red and white flags, which were the Indonesian flags that seemed to be flying from many places. And then I learned that, many of these places were actually the military posts. It's a highly militarized place, and Indonesia had put in over 20,000 troops. And so it was quite evident in Dili that the military was there.
We're talking with Barbara Nash, a UN-accredited observer with the International Federation for East Timor. And Barbara Nash has just recently returned from East Timor. Barbara Nash, let me ask you, because one of the things that the Indonesian government is attempting to do is trying to somehow or another, I think, put forth the proposition that that the Indonesian military really isn't the ones that are doing the kind of slaughter that we're hearing about, that somehow or another these are some sort of rogue paramilitaries. What I'm hearing from you when you're saying you're seeing a lot of the military flags and insignia and all of that, that the military is completely involved in this. This isn't some rogue group of paramilitaries.
Oh, I think that has been really established. I think even President Clinton has, said that in some of his statements. They've been seen even on some of the TV footage. There are, many witnesses to seeing actual militia shooting and then the military right behind them. Doctors that perform surgery and removing bullets, could recognize the fact that these were not from, homemade guns or some of the smaller kinds of weapons, but were from, military weapons. I don't think that they can really, prove that the military is not involved. I think they might be trying to, because I think they're very scared now that we're seriously talking about war crimes. Both Mary Robinson, the High Commissioner for Human Rights for the UN, made that statement way back in, about the 13th, 14th, when she was there, and alluded, she said that that it appears to be systematic, and that all the interlocutors I spoke to, all of them said TNI, which is the Indonesian military, was fully involved in orchestrating it.
Well,
and that's a quote of hers out of the Straits Times. So I don't think Indonesia is going to be able to get away from that one.
Well, I don't think they are anymore, but nevertheless, though, some of the reports that I saw coming out of Indonesia, coming from high government officials, quote-unquote,
mm-hmm.
were that they're still trying to put forth this this clouding of the water, if you will, that somehow
yeah.
or another they didn't do this, other people did this.
Right.
We're talking with Barbara Nash, UN accredited observer with the International Federation for East Timor, who has just returned from East Timor. Barbara Nash, let me ask you this. Can you talk about the level of violence that has been happening in East Timor, in particular recently? But I'd also like to kind of, if we can, at some point move into some of the historical antecedents, because the situation in East Timor, having been invaded by Indonesia, is nothing new. And I'd like to talk about that too, but can you talk about the level of carnage that's been going on there recently?
Well, the human rights atrocities there have been cited from, Amnesty International reports, human rights, and even our own State Department, I think it was probably 2 years ago, cited them on these violations. And, it's been known, and it has contributed to the cutting back on the amounts of aid and training that were being given here in the U.S. It's been a well-known fact that it has been a really horrendous situation for the East Timorese, which probably accounts for the fact that they were at risk. They were at tremendous risk. These militias, which were created and armed by the Indonesian military, were active. When I was in Dili, their houses were well known. They were on the streets. I mean, I saw, one riding on a motorcycle with a big black weapon of some sort, and saw another on a motorcycle with a, he had the machete down his shirt, the handle was kind of sticking out. I mean, these people were there, and there were killings, and there were gunshots, and there was violence before the election. And when they came out for that election, they were risking a great deal.
One of the things I think that people in the United States don't really understand is the level of courage of people like the East Timorese who, I'm sure many, many people there realized that if and when they came out and voted for independence, that there was going to be this kind of backlash. I mean, maybe no one knew the level that it was going to reach, but certainly they knew there was going to be a response, but yet they did it anyway.
They did, and they were afraid. And after the vote, I left on September 5th, which was actually the date I had plan to leave.
This is Full Logic Reverse. We'll be back in just a few moments. Well.
Yeah, I don't know.
I don't
either. It's
just
raining here, but nothing too serious. I don't know what happened.
Yeah, I'm not sure either, frankly, but all of a sudden we were no longer connected. It always makes me wonder sometimes when we're talking about these topics and all of a sudden the phones go dead and things like that. I never really know. Some people would suggest maybe I'm being too paranoid, but you never know. We're talking with Barbara Nash, who is a UN accredited observer with the International Federation for East Timor. Seymour, and Barbara Nash was talking about how the people in East Timor, despite the fact that they knew there were going to be repercussions, that there were already shootings and killings going on, had come out to do this historic and courageous vote. And you were talking, Barbara Nash, about that, and you were just saying something along the lines, if I remember correctly, that you and other observers went to some of the towns after the vote.
Yes, and the people, we went to one town that was right at the base of the mountains, and they had had a difficulty with the militia, and they encouraged us, and we did come back at various times, and just the fact that we were coming in and out, they felt was kind of keeping the militias from harassing them. But they also were having a problem. You see, a lot of people started going into the hills after the vote. They were afraid. They were really afraid. And they, in this particular village, had been sharing all their food. And so they were running out of food because, see, a lot of the businesses were owned by Indonesians who had gone back. And so a lot of people had lost jobs. And they were also afraid to go into Dili to get more food. And so we were able to, the Red Cross brought more food to them. And, of course, I don't know, you know, all these beautiful people, and I have no idea what's happened to them.
Well, there have been thousands and thousands of people who have been killed and still more thousands
yeah.
who continue to be hiding in the mountains, correct?
Yes, that's very true. The figures are coming out of, you know, 7,000, possibly 20,000 have died. And what we're really, I mean, we're very concerned about also the number of people that that were forcibly sent to West Timor.
Talk, if you will, about that.
Well, there's like 1 to 200,000 people were forced to either put in on ships or put in trucks and taken to West Timor. And the situation there is really bad because the militias have come into the camps. They are systematically getting, especially the young men that were independence supporters, and killing them. And so it's a horrendous situation because now they're talking about relocating them to other islands. And, you know, these people are just being almost pawns in this, and Indonesia, you know, has to be made to stop this, and they have to let the aid agencies into these camps, and they also have to let the human rights people be in there to observe whether these people are indeed opting to be in Indonesia or whether they want to go home to East Timor. Right now, it's very difficult for people to have access to these people.
To what degree is the United States government and or other governments from around the world putting pressure on the Indonesian government to allow this type of investigation and observation to be happening?
Well, we're working on legislation right now here in Washington. And there are two bills in particular that are basically trying, their intent is to make sure that all these temporary bans on assistance are kept in place until we have a safe and secure environment in East Timor and that the refugees are that want to return are able to return. So we have in the House, the number is 2809, and in the Senate, it's 1568. But all the calls to say that, you know, folks are concerned about this, they are very important, even if, you know, people have good records. You thank them for their support, and you say, but we need you to support some more. That's very important.
We're talking with Barbara Nash, a UN-accredited observer with the International Federation for East Timor, who has just recently returned from East Timor. Barbara Nash, my question is, it seems, or at least the perception was, and I think the fact, but I let you express your opinion, that the U.S. moved rather slowly to deal with the butchery that was happening in East Timor. And there are many people who are critical of U.S. policy who say that this happened because the U.S., despite all its protestations about human rights in Kosovo, for example, was motivated more by corporate business interest and military interest in Indonesia. That is what caused a less than rapid response to the butchery that was happening. Can you talk a little bit about that? I mean, does that seem valid to you?
I think that it sounds very true, unfortunately. Yes, things should have moved much faster. They should be moving faster now. We have got to get the water and food in there. And calls to Richard Holbrooke at the UN are also encouraged to make sure that water and food is getting in there, because we're getting stories of some really sad situations. People, it's over 2 weeks now. And that's, we're talking real hot. That's not far from the equator. So, yes. Oh, the history of the United States and East Timor. Unfortunately, I don't think Americans realize, but it goes way back to the invasion, even before that. But in 1975, President Ford and Henry Kissinger visited with Suharto and, for all intents and purposes, gave him the green light. They said they would, they weren't going to react. And so within 8 hours, this bloody invasion, which killed over 200,000, began. And the U.S. has supplied weapons. I mean, those are the weapons right now that are doing the killing and have done the killing in East Timor, a good percentage of them. Britain is also a supplier, as are other Western countries. But we had, they estimate, over $1 billion worth of weapons sales over the years. And we also, and this, I think anyone who has served in the military will be cringing, that we did a tremendous amount of training. We just from 92 had like 41 training exercises with the Indonesian military, and not only with the military in general, but with the Kopassus forces, which are the ones that are known for the most atrocious violations of human rights. We also have, of course, lots of economic interest there. There's a lot of investment. A lot of our sporting goods companies, they have things manufactured there at a very low cost and make tremendous profits. So all told, there's a lot of things that have influenced the policy and influence that we didn't react as fast as we should have, or made things happen as fast as we should have.
Let's go back briefly to something that you said, because when I was in El Salvador, I learned that they had a section of the El Salvadoran military there called the Atlacat Battalion.
Mm-hmm.
And it sounds to me what was the name of this special group that you pointed out?
Kopassus.
And they are known for their...
They wear red berets and are kind of modeled after the green berets, but, their record is horrible. And we were teaching them such wonderful things as sniper techniques and mortar attack and all kinds of, things that we, probably in our goodness didn't anticipate that they were going to turn on innocent people, but that's exactly what has happened and has been happening and has been known to be happening. They've been in East Timor for a long time, the Kopassus forces.
We're talking with Barbara Nash, a UN-accredited observer with the International Federation for East Timor. Barbara Nash, we just have a moment left. What I'd like to ask you is, what do the American people need to do, and what can they do to really help out the situation in East Timor and the Timorese people there?
Well, I think they have to call their senators and representatives and tell them that they want these halts to military and economic aid to stay in place. We don't want them lifted at this time. We want, several conditions met in terms of stability and peace in East Timor, refugees back, people accounted for, and as far as the need is tremendous. I mean, as you've read, the country is totally destroyed. I mean, they have destroyed everything, and you know, we're learning more and more as more and more people are going back in now with the troops. There are a few places, though there are more than few, but I mean, Oxfam America, 26 West Street, Boston, Massachusetts, 02111, is sending food, and you can write the check to Oxfam America and Market East Timor. Of course, the American Red Cross, P.O. Box 37243, Washington, D.C., 20013, and East Timor Relief Fund, P.O. Box 420832, San Francisco, California, 94142. That is actually a global exchange. The check can go to Global Exchange, but write East Timor Relief on it because they're handling the relief. So those are just a couple of places that are gearing up to make sure that we, you know, get help in there and get it in there now. And I can't stress more the need to contact the Senate and the House to make sure that the some of this aid that was supposed to go, you know, they have it in the budget. Indonesia, East Timor needs it very badly. Their water, their electricity, sanitation, everything has been destroyed. It was pretty simple to begin with. I mean, this was not a big city. It was, you know, a relatively small city. So it needs lots of support.
Barbara Nash, thank you for being with us today to let us know about what's happening in East Timor and what the people in our listening area can do to help out with the situation there.
Thank you.
This is Full Logic Reverse. We'll be back in just a few moments. And we do have with us Andrew Gross-Gaitan, who is with us, and hopefully Maria Perez is with us as well. Andrew, are you there?
Yes, we're here.
Oh, great. I'm glad to have you both be with us. I thought, unfortunately, that we had missed you, so we have a little bit of a late start. But perhaps if Maria can help us and you can help us, because I know you will have to translate, if she can tell us what's happening at Arden Fair Mall, what's happening with her job, and what she's trying to do to gain some justice for janitors, and how our listeners can help.
Okay, we actually have two workers here from the company. One of them is Rosalina Garcia, who is working there now, and the other is Maria Perez, who was fired and just won her job back. She's gonna be going back to work this week.
Great.
So let me introduce both of them.
Mi nombre es Rosalina García.
My name is Rosalina García.
Trabajo para Sutter.
I work for Sutter.
Tengo dos niños.
I've got two kids.
Nosotros estamos luchando para organizarnos con la unión.
We're fighting to organize ourselves with the union.
Para tener días festivos pagados.
We're trying to win paid holidays.
Para tener vacaciones pagadas.
Paid vacations,
aseguranza médica,
health insurance,
trabajo justo,
and more fair working conditions.
Right. Más dinero.
We'd like to earn some more money.
Great, thank you very much. And Maria Perez is with us as well?
Yes, she is.
Mi nombre es Maria Perez.
My name is Maria Perez.
Estamos luchando para que tengan tener más beneficios.
We're fighting to try and get some health benefits.
Y para tener, pues, medical...
And to have medical coverage.
Mm-hmm. Y para tener también, para tener días festivos.
And holidays. And I just won my case.
Well, that's great. You bet. As I understand it from looking at some of the material that I have, and I'm very pleased to hear that Senora Perez has won her case, and that's wonderful, is that Maria Perez, as well as I'm sure any number of other women and or men who are supporting families, are working at one of the most prestigious malls in Sacramento and taking home less than $900 a month and supporting five children on that type of a wage. And no one can possibly make ends meet on something like that. I mean, and that's really, on some level, the issue that we're talking about here is some sort of fairness for people who work very, very hard, correct?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's true.
What can our listeners do to be of help? I understand that there is going to be an organization rally, a march at Arden Fair Mall. Is that still happening on October 2nd?
Mm-hmm,
yes, we're inviting members from the labor and religious communities and the community at large to come and join us at that protest. We're glad that the workers have been put back to work, but they continue to face a tremendous amount of pressure. We have delegations of community and labor supporters coming with the workers to walk them back into work over the course of the week. And we just had an organizer come back from Arden Fair where the workers are telling us that they are being disciplined for talking to us while we walk through the mall. Although we've won some cases, the struggle is still very tough there at Arden Fair Mall.
What can our listeners do to be of help to the ladies and or other people who are working there and also SEIU and the whole Justice for Janitors campaign?
I think the most important thing is to show up, if it's possible, on October 2nd at noon right at the front entrance of Arden Fair Mall, and also to contact the mall management. Their offices are right there in the mall, and tell them that you feel that it's unfair that the workers have to be facing the kind of workload that they face and the kind of treatment they face at Arden Fair Mall just for a minimum wage and no health benefits at all.
We'd like to thank you all for being on the program this afternoon and certainly would like to follow up on this issue when we have more time to discuss it more fully. So thank all three of you for being with us, and I apologize for our late start.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you for joining us for this edition of Full Logic Reverse. I'm your host, Mike Thornton. It's been my pleasure to be part of the team bringing you this edition of the program today. If you'd like more information about Full Logic Reverse, you can contact us via email, flr@jps.net, or by phone, 530-265-9462. We invite you to join us next time for another edition of Full Logic Reverse.